Thanks for coming, guys. This is insane. I can't believe how many people are here. Really excited about this. We have an amazing panel here, the No Reservations crew, helmed by Tony Bourdain. Give a hand. Give another round of applause for all these folks. We're going to talk a little bit about the social media aspect of what they do at No Reservations. There's a lot of really cool stuff that they've been doing over the past couple of years. And why don't we just get right into it? I mean, we don't have a heck of a lot of time, so I don't want to waste a second. So tell me, Helen, I actually want to start with you. When did you guys start to use social media as a way to drive viewership to the site?
So we hijacked the page on December 9th of 2010. As you can see that, and on December 22nd, we took over the Twitter page, or Tony rather took over the Twitter page. And, I don't know if you can see it, but that's his first tweet, about a fruit basket, something very,
It was a Top Chef related tweet.
Yeah.
I mean, I think in both cases, we took over the Twitter and Facebook accounts largely as a defensive measure. You know, we didn't want them to suck, you know, so.
Yeah, I mean, we wanted a more direct connection with our fans, and we felt like this was the easiest way to sort of engage our fans. And you know, we all have close relationships, so as an extension of that, you know, we wanted to be able to produce our own content from the field and, you know, just control all our social media platforms and try new things, so.
We want also, I mean, for people to know that the No Reservations Twitter account is actually me. It's not somebody else, but the Into No Reservations account, you know, as far as housekeeping, behind the scenes, that's Helen. And
yeah, I have the most schizophrenic Twitter account because it goes between what more is like Tom's account, which is all drunk tweeting mostly, you know, tweeting out promotional stuff. About the show, when to tune in.
You basically you edit all of the content that's coming out of the road trips, anything we're generating, basically, that in any way fits into any kind of social media, it goes through you.
Yeah. I hope that workers' compensation covers therapy, because I'm going to need lots of it after this workiness.
And what about the crew as well? I mean, you have your producer and the director of photography here.
Well, it's at Zach Zamboni, we should point out,
yeah.
And at TV Superstar. That's a director of a cinematography, Zach Zamboni, and our producer, veteran producer, Tom Vitale, a.k.a. TV Superstar.
With two R's.
Yeah, and there's some kind of a weird... They both have very different strategies for getting followers, and there's sort of an occasionally an informal alcohol-fueled competition
unfortunately, Zach is winning right now.
So you can see in this slide here, sometimes we get really competitive on the road, and Tom will go through desperate measures to try to get more followers than Zach. Zach has a more zen approach to his Twitter account. It's more of a, you know, cinematography, tech-related,
Philosophical.
Yeah. And Tom is just whatever he can do.
Well, why don't you explain your strategy, Tom? what's the most effective way to get Twitter followers in your personal experience?
People seem to really like the drunk tweets. I don't know. I started it as a joke, or you know, an inside sort of joke thing when you started tweeting, and that, hence the name TV Superstar, so that nobody would know it was really me until you straight away blew up my spot. But. I don't know. I just seem to be struck with the urge to tweet whenever I drink.
Do you find that your involvement with Twitter has led to destructive behavior patterns?
It has. It's definitely been part of the downward spiral.
I mean, but on the other hand, like, you'll get really fucked up and wake up the next day with like 8,000 new followers.
I know.
So there's that.
I've got like 12 friends, and half of them are on this table, right? This panel right here. So it's kind of strange.
How many people on the show actually are consistent tweeters?
Well, you can see here we have everyone from the PA to the director of technology to our director of design, sidekick. You know him, you love him, Zamir Gada. To the production management side of it, we have unit managers on here. So it's a mix of the field crew and also people at home base who are taking care of things on that end.
I think the most prolific tweeters are probably at this table. Yeah, yeah, no doubt about it.
And what is the thing that really grabs people's attention? What are the moments that people have really latched on to? You have some Facebook spikes here.
So we started in December of 2010, and I don't have a background in social media at all. I was unit managing and APing, and it was all, we just kind of had to learn it, you know, as we go. And so we just were trying different things. You can see this first one. I mean, this January 2011, that's pretty much one of our early posts, yeah, that we did that from the
pain,
field.
Pain, humiliation, head injuries. That always works. Yeah. That's good stuff.
Yeah. you know, behind the scenes, drinking Ron and Jeremy in Finland, that's definitely
Ron
something.
Ron Jeremy, always a big,
somehow.
Big vote getter.
Yeah.
Any Ron Jeremy big. Reference is good for how many hits on Facebook? Huge.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Insane. I mean,
so to speak.
We got 16,000. Yeah.
So whenever you need an extra push, you just throw the Ron Jeremy out there.
Whenever.
He makes
definitely.
It easy. That's the bottle there. That is a.
We found that in Finland. It was out of nowhere. We were at this random. We were at this gypsy bar, and Tony happened to be at the bar, and he was like, "Come over here. Look at this." And we look at it. It's like Ron DeJeremy. I mean, it's from Finland.
This is a legitimate brand.
It's a legit brand.
It's almost like you guys have a second show on Facebook and Twitter. You have stuff that goes on the air, and then there's a whole other experience that people get on
true.
The other side.
We didn't plan for that to be the case. But that's how it's working out.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to highlight these two posts. You know, Christopher Walken, I mean, you know, there needs no explanation. But this is one of our most liked posts with 20,000 likes. But it just goes to show, we posted something, this from Baja. It was just
it's a picture of a fish taco. Yeah. How many likes
fish
did that
tacos,
get?
Fish tacos, it got 13,000 likes. So
nearly as many people like fish tacos as
Christopher Walken. Yeah, food porn works.
What do you guys think about people that sit there at restaurants and tweet pictures of their food? What's your take on that?
We're guilty. We're definitely guilty.
We are food pornographers ourselves.
We're the premier. Yeah.
They're fun to mock. It's probably unhealthy. It's a little disturbing. I mean, the chef side of me, I look at that and it's just strange. It's like, relax and enjoy the food. Stop thinking about it. Stop taking pictures of it. I mean, what are they go home and touch themselves later? But on the other hand, we very much benefit from that mentality. So, and we're in that business. Not only do we, you know, we take pictures of food on our phones and with still cameras, we film it beautifully in every imaginable angle. And in fact, a major thrust of our show is trying to figure out what new, you know, what can we do? How can we shoot barbecue in a way that it has never, ever been depicted before? Whether it's black and white, as in the Rome show, you know, how can we shoot food? How can we make people want it badly? And yet do it in a way that hasn't been done before. And I think to our credit and particularly to our camera team, we've been able to do some really amazing stuff with images, food-related images that, you know, they said it couldn't be done. You know, food porn in black and white. I think that was pretty
But your
awesome.
Show's...
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's funny because we're this show, we're not a commercial show, and I think there's this really interesting relationship between... Are you making a steakhouse commercial, or are you photographing, are you capturing the food that you're eating in the moment? And there's always that tension between food porn as in commercial, or food porn as in, this is the great food that we're eating right now, and we're really eating it.
But we've explored the other side as well. We've very deliberately done two episodes where we tried to draw an explicit link between the rules, the camera language of pornography, and food, you know, classic food porn. And basically the challenge was, let's make the filthiest, nastiest, most indefensible, sheer prurient interest, zero societal value hour of television without even really, you know, without any nudity or any sexual reference other than outside of food.
But your show is a lot more than just about food. It's about the communal experience that people have getting together and sharing or the meal. The meal is part of it, bringing people together, but there's also this whole other level and dynamic that's going on where you're...
Well, it's also about who's cooking and why.
Yeah.
Because that's at least as important. I mean, one of the things that's mockable, I guess, about what we do, all of us who take pictures of food, is that it ignores the other two, you know, the really important parts of a meal. You know, who's cooking, why are they cooking what they're cooking, and who are you eating with?
Yeah.
Oh, if we haven't announced this yet, Drunk Hulk is live tweeting our panel for our Second String Experience. So please follow Drunk Hulk.
By the way, along with you, Anthony, is my premier source of breaking news.
Oh, thank you.
Completely faster than any other outlet. It's you and Drunk Hulk.
That's a nice dynamic.
Look, I heard about Gaddafi's death from Drunk Hulk, in fact, long before anybody else.
He actually beat me to that story.
He beat you to that. It was like
Drunk Hulk had it first.
What was it? Drunk Hulk said, just learned to spell Gaddafi's name, now he did, something like that. It's awesome.
He's the only person who knows how to correctly spell Gaddafi, actually, Drunk Hulk.
I know. That's kind of sad somehow.
So you guys mess around with a lot of different types of technology and photography technology particularly. Why don't you tell us a little bit? Helen's actually messing around with this device that's shaped sort of a square, rectangular thing. I don't know if you guys have seen this or read about it, but it's actually really cool. You can, Helen, why don't you tell them actually what that
is? We've been experimenting just with a different kind of technology. You know, again, like, we're all new at this, so we're just trying to find different angles and see what works, what doesn't. So we've done some stuff, live streaming on set. We did with Microfino, and when we were shooting the Southie episode. There's a clip here.
We'll show you a live stream where they were. Which episode was this again?
It was for the Southie episode in Boston.
So they actually took questions while they were in the middle of shooting the Southie episode. Was it a Google Hangout?
No, it was just through Facebook. Through the live stream. There was a live U backpack that we were streaming from.
And people were sending in questions to Facebook and responding.
Exactly. And so one of these questions were screw, marry, kill. And your options are Adam Richman, Sarah Palin, and Andrew Zimmern. So here's that.
Let's take a look.
This is so much more important than the show.
Sure,
of course.
No, this could be.
We had 2,000 people are watching that. That's like twice as many people as watching the show.
That's true, yeah. So
he's looking for one.
Andrew Zimmern, Adam Richman, and Sarah Palin. Who would you marry, Sabu, or Cliff?
I gotta grab you.
Who are the choices again?
Andrew
I'd marry Andrew. Because he's a good man, and he's a good and decent guy, and I like his wife very much.
But the marrying wouldn't be difficult if you in fact like his wife.
I know
it's theoretical.
If I had to get up every day and find somebody in the kitchen, making breakfast.
Thank you.
My wife doesn't do that. if I had to see somebody every day of my life, for the rest of my life, of those three, I guess Andrew Zimmern. I'm trying to picture him in a house coat. All right, and then who would I fuck? I'm thinking Adam Richman, in a bustier. With a tramp stamp, kind of like a tramp stamp, a bustier, a bob cut, and a thick Italian accent.
Are you sure that Food Channel people don't have secret parties and things that we...
So who am I pushing over a cliff?
I'm a big fan of that visual.
By default.
Of course. Yeah, it's nothing personal. No, it is personal. Yeah, well.
Nicely done. That's Mike Ruffino in the clip there with you, right?
Mike Ruffino, legendary founding member of the Unband, one of the notable for many, many reasons. They banned in their hometown of Boston, which is really hard to do. One of the great flameouts in rock and roll history, also the author of a terrific book called Gentlemanly Repose. which I think is the best rock and roll memoir ever written. And he also scores the show frequently for us.
Nice.
Whatever we want, an entire, you know, what we try very hard to do. We understand that when you're doing a food and travel show, the story's always the same, right? It's about, in this case, a character, me. You know, I go someplace, I eat a lot of food, presumably I learn something, and come home. You know, that's kind of boring. So we're always trying to do, instead of making it look like a series, we try to make each episode look like a standalone film. You know, a little self-contained universe, to the best of our ability, giving each episode a distinct look. And part of that is to give each episode, whenever possible, a distinct sound. So if you have each episode scored, you know, the Boston episode, he scored with a very early 70s sort of film soundtrack sound to it. And the Rome show, we were again looking at movie, you know, tip-offs there. So he does a lot of work with us there. He's also a very, very funny guy.
You think social media kind of gives some of these shows a second life where people will see things that they didn't see before, they'll go back and...
Well, see, here's where the divide between conventional, you know, television aspirations and I think our aspirations are certainly mine. You know, if you run a television network, you still care how many people watch the show at 10 o'clock on Monday. That's important. That's presumably how your ad rates are determined, by how many people, you know, schedule themselves to sit down and actually watch at 10 o'clock on Monday. I don't personally give a shit how many people watch on Monday at 10 o'clock. I care how many people watch at the end of a two-year period over time after however they see it. That's a very different way to look at who's using your product and how.
Yeah.
I want to, you know, how many people like the show at the end of 2 years? That's the number I care about.
I want to bring in Zach and the rest of the panel here. Tell me a bit about how you guys go about trying to keep it fresh and making the show always seem different from the next.
Yeah, well, I mean, we, you know, as a DP, I got very lucky in landing a show where I could do something different all the time. I mean, from, you know, it's encouraged across the board. Just mix it up. So, I mean, we change cameras, we change the way we color shows, we change the camera work in the show, we change as much as we can. The tricky part about that in travel is that you don't always know where you're going. So there's this balance between thinking what the place might be and trying to make a plan of how you're going to shoot that thing. Do you have the right tools? Do you have the right, you know, colors and contrasts in mind? And then you arrive at a place, and it's never the way you thought it was. So it's kind of, there's this balance between planning, capturing, being changed by the place.
And we spent a lot of time thinking about film looks.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know.
Yeah, we reference movies all the time. We reference TV shows.
But I mean, as far as lenses, focus, we want it to look like most of the time. Mm-hmm. We're using film cues.
Yeah, we're a cinema-based show. We try, you know, we're all trained in, we all came from film backgrounds. That's how we think. That's how we approach every shot, you know. Definitely, I think that's what makes our show different, is all the people involved came from the film world, and that's, you know, especially with him. You know, this guy, he's an encyclopedia of film, far more than any of us are. So That's the root of the show. Your encyclopedia of movies and us, you know.
We spent a lot of time, to be honest, we spent a lot of time in hotel lobbies around the world, mm-hmm. sitting at some crappy bar, listening to the inevitable Filipino cover band impeccably do, you know, and there's, everywhere you go in Southeast Asia or anywhere in Asia, it seems there's a great Filipino cover band who can do everything that Guns N' Roses ever recorded, note for note, as well as Happy Birthday in Cantonese and German. And we spent a lot of time drinking cocktails, places like that, at the end of a shooting day, talking specifically about we're about to shoot in, you know, country X, you know, or Libya or the Dominican Republic. What can we do that's, like, really fucked up that we haven't done before? And we push each other like that. And, you know, it's like we've worked together so long, it really is like a band. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes the bass player, you know, has an idea for a song, and, you know, we all like that because, mm-hmm. again, you were always at risk of making the same story the same way.
Yeah, none of us want to do it. I mean, nobody involved and the show wants to make the same show ever. It's like, it's our MO, you know? It's great.
Like, that would suck.
Whatever's working last week.
Even if it was like, even if everybody loved it, you know, like what one of the real rules of last season is, a lot of the shows that really worked for us have had heartwarming family meal scenes in end of Act 5, Act 6, you know, where you get together with a, you know, really nice family from a different culture. And it's a learning and growing experience. And we're really trying hard to avoid that season. And just go in it's just too easy. And it's, we don't want people to feel, okay, well, it's 14 minutes before the hour. You know, it's time for a big, you know, hug. you know, I like shows that end on a really bleak, depressing note, but...
You ever have your spot blown up by social media? Well, people will find you out shooting and they'll...
Yeah, it can make things difficult.
Yeah, I think Tom has a great story from Baja.
Twitter giveth and it taketh away, too, because people, you know, restaurants we come to film with, I mean, they're very excited we're coming, and so there was this period of time where they were tweeting, making posts on Facebook, and then we'd get to this authentic experience, and it was completely overrun by people with cameras, which is very flattering, but it makes it really difficult for us to do our job. And so we've had to institute an absolute zero, you know, advance tweet and Facebook policy for the show, which, you know, again, helps us fly under the radar, which is essential to making the program. And recently in Mexico, one of my last shoots, we were very thorough about that. We talked to everyone, you know, they all agreed. But the one person we forgot to talk to was a little 80-year-old, you know, tostada woman who had a street cart in Ensenada. And so we arrive at the location, and
apparently she tweets.
She, you know, blew up Twitter, and so there were so many people. It all worked out because we talked to them before, you know, just act naturally. So it all worked out, but
act naturally. Yeah, like 80 people standing there with cell phones. You know? But it happens. And then of course we blow places up. Like we're always looking for the authentic, you know, unspoiled little neighborhood joint that, you know, just happens to have, you know, a really good fish taco and, you know, great beer. And, you know, that's what we look for. I genuinely love those places. And, you know, that's what makes our show, one of the things that makes the show special. But, you know, then we go, we put them on TV, and we ruin them for all time. You know, on one hand, the business owners like the business, but on the other hand, we get a lot of feedback from, you know, who are all these assholes clogging up my bar? You know, they weren't here before. You've ruined my neighborhood hangout. So in a lot of ways, we do destroy what we love on the show. And it's something that we got to kind of live with.
Helen, you just had up some of the stuff you do on Tumblr. I think that's really interesting that there's this whole fan community that creates all this art. They do animated GIFs. They create really beautiful, intricate posters. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I mean, we just tried to... Tumblr is perfect for, I think, what we're doing because, you know, you can just tag something and search those tags and see all the amazing artwork and things that people are coming out with. I mean, we're posting stuff that even is not directly related to No Reservations, but, for example, like Bring Me the Head of Ronald McDonald is exactly the kind of thing that is totally in line with our brand and show. You know, we'll show behind-the-scenes Krampus, which we'll show a little later.
I'm looking forward to that.
And, you know, just things like this picture right here is a picture of we're editing the Finland episode right now. You know, just fan art, just constantly searching
some
for
of it's
stuff
pretty
that,
disturbing,
some
actually.
Some of it is, I definitely get lots of weird mail, I gotta say.
The nesting Euro Russian mail. Dolls of my image that somebody had really painted. I mean, super, super, super tiny. They spent, like, way too long. Are they also building a, you know, like a replica Tony in their cellar out of, like, nail trimmings and, you know, tin foil?
Macaroni art.
Yeah.
You guys kind of cultivate that kind of, you know.
Yeah, it's our fault, I guess.
Time is like running by really fast, so I do want to get to the Krampus episode. I want to talk about how social media really drove a lot of viewership to the Christmas episode. You guys saw a really nice influx.
Well, we try very hard. You know, a tradition on the show is to make as disturbing, dark, unsettling a holiday special as we can every year. We do absolutely everything we can to cause fear, confusion, and panic at the network. And it's become something of a tradition for a lot of reasons. I mean, a lot of times these things land with a dull thud initially, They don't rate particularly well. But over time, I think especially our best fans, our hardcore fans, you know, that's who we're making it for. So this last time out, we reached for the moon and the stars. So we just thought it was a great combination of Austrian children's stories, ultra-violent ones, vegan black metal chef, criminal misuse of other network stars, including Samantha Brown, most notoriously. Christopher Walken, Nora Jones scored the show for us, did a song about a Catalonian pooping log in Catalan. So on one hand, we dropped on the network, this big steaming load we dropped on them, was we've got, you know, Christopher Walken, you know, Nora Jones, the album of the year, but the band fucked up. You know, they're all in the show for reasons that no one could really understand. But on the other hand, there's some pretty disturbing material in there.
I think we're going to show a clip from the holiday show.
This is where they drew the... We showing a clip or are we showing Krampus?
You want to show Krampus first?
We can show the clip first. No, I don't know if you know Samantha Brown. She's sort of chipper, cheerful, you know, sort of America's sweetheart, the girl next door. This is her in our Christmas show.
This is Samantha Brown as you've never seen her before.
By the way, she is so completely awesome for doing this and made up a lot of her own lines, most of her own lines. We gave her the situation, and she pretty much wrote her own stuff.
Amazing. She went
full batshit crazy for us. And
newly engorged, so to speak, with holiday cheer, I started to feel that maybe it was time to give back. Because that's what the holidays are all about, really, aren't they? Giving. Down the hall, a neighbor in need. I had a feeling that I could help. Maybe, just maybe, make up for some past wrongs.
Thank God the show is on 15 hours a day.
I'm in the all of the King Cobra Chow. I eat 17 egg salad sandwiches.
Yeah,
I need a bowel movement that coils through the bowl.
What I watch for.
And I can play the flute, making that same bowel movement.
Come on, eat it.
I'm going to trick
you. You got it. Shove that hamburger down.
This is my favorite part. Yeah, it's going to spit up a lung.
Well, if it isn't the host of Abroad, Anthony Bourdain.
Who the hell are you, Wong?
Well, I heard we're neighbors. I thought I'd stop by and maybe bring you a little snack. Some delicious...
Well, don't just stand there. Give it to me. Jeez. What is it?
April Bloomfield, meat pie. It's good.
This is very nice, but I only eat takeout from La Bernadette. So, an esteemed guest in my presence... Everyone kisses your ass like it's an amuse bouche. And now you show up with your good friend Samantha Brown.
Well,
you know what? Sit down, I got a drink for you. Come on. Don't be scared. Yeah. All right. Now this is good stuff, Anthony. All right, it's just got a little bit of my lipstick on there, but that's what's going to happen. So.
You?
Can you down that?
Happy holidays.
You know, I'm glad you came today. I haven't seen you in a while.
Good to see you.
Yeah, have you been mentioning me in your shows lately? Because, you know, I don't watch your show. I don't really like it. You know, it's okay. But, you know, my fans give me a little idea of what you say about me, huh? What are you saying?
I kid because I love. I look up to you, Samantha. You've been a role model to me.
I'm a role model.
You were there first.
That's right. I was there first. When I was there, everyone wanted authentic, adorable, bubbly. Then you came along, right? And now everybody just wants it's an all you guys do is eat. Men eating. How in the world that became interesting, I have no idea. I'm delightful. I was bubbly. Now look, it's just men on this channel. Oh, don't walk away from me. If I had a career, where are you going, Anthony?
Never just, I thought huh? I'd going? Clean up a little bit.
Don't touch that. There's still meat on that bone.
Sure, kid. I don't know. Tidy up a little bit, something, anything.
Well, you know what you can do? Just stand there, all right? Just stand there, because I got a little something for you, Anthony. Her name's Paula.
Oh, what that? What?
Ha 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 ha!
happy holidays.
So, as you can imagine, that didn't go down too well. There was some concern, shall we say, in the halls of power. But we crossed the line, apparently, with this. There's a treasured Eastern European Christmas, I guess, what would you call it? A folklore tale. You know, it's not enough to have Santa Claus in, you know, parts of Austria, Germany, you know, tough mountain people. You know, it's not enough to tell a kid you better be good. You know, if you're good, Santa will give you presents. There's an evil Santa who goes along with that. If you're bad, you're going to get the shit kicked out of you, and worse, by bad Santa called Krampus. So we thought we'd illustrate this perfectly legitimate episode of a beloved folklore dating back hundreds of years and still celebrated by the indigenous peoples of Europe. So we thought we were on safe ground, but apparently not. So this was, we were asked to remove this.
But it got quite a lot of views on YouTube.
Yeah, so which we did as you know, we were always respectful of our network's wishes. And but what we did do is we put this up on YouTube, where within 5 days it got, 100,000
views.
Yeah. And I don't know what people found so offensive. Let's take a look, shall we?
Every year in Christmas Town, after Santa has come down, to his comrade he gives the gist of who's been naughty on his list. Now this is very serious business, as little Gunther and Ingrid are about to find out, for there is no escaping Krampus.
Hello there, Krampus. There are two naughty children in the house down the block. Why don't you pay them a little visit?
Sure thing, Santa. That's what I'm here for. Maybe later we can meet at the beer garden.
Go get 'em, Krampus.
Inside, the children, warmed by the fire and with presents galore, were happy and excited to hear a knock at the door.
What?
Santa's back, said the little boy and girl with glee. But alas, it was not Santa. It was Krampus.
Oh, no, said the children.
Which one of you stole a crunch bar from the local candy shop?
No.
And which one of you disobeyed Mommy and Daddy and went outside when you shouldn't have?
We didn't do it, and it wasn't us.
Oh, delicious little liars. It was both of you. I think it's time to get into the bag.
No. Oh, no.
This be a lesson to all of you naughty children. If you keep it up, you too may get a visit from Santa's friend, Krampus.
I don't know what the problem was.
That was the toned-down version, too, wasn't it? There was more blood in the original.
And by the way, it's much milder than the real story.
The real Krampus story.
Yeah, it gets pretty bad for Gunther and his sister in real life, yeah.
Bringing it back a little bit to the technology, because I do want to go back to some of those cool things that you guys have been doing on the show.
So we partnered up. Adam Lupscher is our design and graphics director, and he had invested in the Kickstarter for Cogetto. And so we had Tom in Singapore for the layover. I think it was your iPhone attachment, or did you use the 7D?
It was the iPhone. Well, it depends on which one.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to show, and this is something that we just shared on Facebook.
This is the iPhone.
So here's Tom.
So this is a little device that you slap onto the top of an iPhone.
Right. Yeah, and it gives you a 360 video, and you can scroll around. Mm-hmm. And we'll just show an example.
We're here in Singapore, live, filming a layover episode. It's a little hot, Changi Village. We're waiting on line for some good nasi lemak here. As you can see, Tony is talking to some locals. And here's Seth. And there's Eric over there somewhere.
And Helen's controlling the camera with the laptop right now.
Full 360 view.
There is Tony filming his.
So something so simple, but you know, again, it's just stuff that we're really excited about and just experimenting with. And as you can see, we're really excited about the new Lightstrobe camera. We've been taking shots. We just came from Franklin's, and we've been taking a bunch of shots there. So really excited to feed that in.
We're looking forward to, seriously, we're looking forward to our first drone. I mean, we really want one. We've been talking about it a lot, and when they get to the point that we can actually mount a camera on something around that big that we can afford to destroy.
Customs is also an issue, though.
Yeah,
into Uzbekistan with a drone causes some concern at immigration.
I have some people I can hook you up with that do a lot of cool stuff with drones.
Yeah, we're into that for sure. Yeah, it's just getting them into the country. That's our only. Yeah, we're up for it.
Yeah, I mean, actually in Uzbekistan we went in with a underwater rig for the cameras, and it's a landlocked country, and they were really unhappy with that. They caused us some problems.
Yeah, radios, sat phones, there's still a lot of countries that don't even like that. Yeah. So
we should point out we use a lot of film lenses. I don't even know what elitist is, but if you could explain that.
Yeah, back in the day, I mean, I think we were probably one of the first people to jump over to that. We're just part of our cinema. You know, we've always trying to make. We were saying earlier, we're always trying to make the show more like a movie and less like a TV show, whatever that means. We're changing cameras all the time. We're shooting on the F3s here with Ingenue zooms and primes on the Super 35 chip.
We shot on cell phone too. We've done a few shots in the desert.
Definitely.
The desert show with Queens of the Stone Age. We shot with we were tormenting snakes with a cell phone on the end of a stick, getting we got a great shot of a snake lunging and spritzing venom right into the lens.
Yeah,
and
Mo
that
Fallon.
That was a cell phone shot, I think. Yeah.
That was Morgan Fallon's show. It's right over
our
there.
Our second snakes, right? You got a cobra lunge at you recently, right?
Yeah, that was a big. People on Twitter like that. You know?
Yeah.
Me almost getting killed by a cobra. People love that.
It's a crowd pleaser. What about Google Plus? Have you done any Hangouts as of yet?
Me, no.
Not yet, but we're planning on definitely doing that in the future.
Okay.
But one thing that we definitely want to mention was that we just came back from Finland recently, and the only reason why Tony decided to go to Finland was because we found out through Facebook Insights that we had an enormous fan base in Finland. And there was a guy who had created a Facebook group to try to get Tony to come there.
Something that I wouldn't ordinarily be inclined to do. I'm not constitutionally sort of a Scandinavian, you know. Mm. I hate clean, orderly countries where everything works and they have very few social problems. I like hot, messy, dysfunctional, passionate countries that are barely keeping their shit together, where the food's spicy, and you know. But in this case, it was a drumbeat. You know, we were aware of the fact that I think the largest group of fans outside of the States are in Finland, and then this Facebook page started that was
insane.
Designed specifically to get us to go, and with people providing suggestions for what we should do when we got there. Eventually, the drumbeat became too loud to not go. So we responded to essentially a Facebook campaign.
Yeah, and once we were there, we were crowdsourcing locations. I mean, before we'd have to go through blogs and, you know, like screw the travel guides, screw the blogs. It's like now you can just ask.
What should
the
we're
locals,
coming to Finland? What should
here.
We do?
Yeah, we're here. What are we doing?
You go directly to the locals and find out what places they go to, what they really enjoy.
Then you got to winnow through.
You get a lot of crap too.
It was a little disconcerting because like 90% of all respondents said sauna, get drunk and go to a sauna.
Blood sausage, sauna.
Blood sausage, sauna. Get drunk, go to sauna. Blood sausage.
Pretty much.
Have you ever
ended up ended up at Great Shuffle?
Do you ever wind up meeting up with some of the people that you meet through these crowdsourcing?
Yeah, we did in Finland. We ended up meeting up with the guy who created the Facebook group, and he actually pulled through with a box of still steaming blood sausage from Tanqueray. So it worked out.
So yeah, worked
win-win.
Out.
Win-win. Yeah,
that's good. You want to talk about the thing that you're going to be doing?
Yeah, so we also are really excited to announce that we're doing a turntable session on March 22nd, and we'll be live streaming that. It'll be Tony, Mike Ruffino, Eddie Wong, Doug from Big A Ice Cream, and Marky Ramone. So we'll be sending that link out.
And also,
hopefully Otavia will be there hijacking your set because she has amazing taste in music.
No, my wife has horrifying taste in music, and there's no way she's getting anywhere near. Oh, my God.
It'll be fun.
Just really bad taste in music.
So I wanted to give everyone here who wants to ask questions a chance to talk to the panel. So why don't we throw it out to questions now? We have somebody who's going to walk around with mics. I don't know exactly how this is going to work. I think you can just queue up, in front of the mics.
Hello? Go ahead. Hey, guys, thanks for coming. You talked a little bit about how you work with the networks, and it kind of sounds like if you can't put it on TV, you'll go ahead and put it on YouTube. Can you talk a little bit about whether or not Travel Channel has any control on what you put out in the social media space?
They do. I mean, they've been actually very cool about it. Yeah. I mean, first of all, to be fair, I don't think in the history of television anyone has ever had as much creative freedom as we've been given by Travel Channel. We do the show the way we want. You know, we do it where we want, the way we want, and largely, almost entirely without interference. There very, very rarely have there been any unresolvable issues over content. And in fact, I believe technically that the network owned that Krampus video, for instance. It was work product that they paid for. They were nice enough to let us put it up on YouTube, so we did so with their permission and to great success.
I mean, we also work with them on we did a Reddit video recently, an Ask Me Anything thing, and there's definitely a lot of collaboration going on. So
I'd say
posted on their YouTube channel.
You know, given there are a lot of ironies here. You know, I left Food Network years ago, largely over content destination questions like that. Now the same parent company bought my network. But it has been it has been a happy relationship. I mean, they've given us they've been extraordinarily I don't know whether they're not forgiving, but they put up with a lot. I mean, an hour, a travel and food show, largely subtitled, shot entirely in black and white. That must have been a difficult pill for them. So they're to be congratulated, I think.
Hi. When you're visiting new cities, how do you make your restaurant selections? And here in Austin, where have you visited so far? Where are you planning on going?
Well, I'm not telling you where I'm going, but we went to Franklin Barbecue this morning, and it was un-fucking believable. We reach out to, there's a lot of pre-production, we reach out to, fixer selection is really important. You know, we were looking always a local who knows who to bribe, you know, what permits we'll need, how to get things done, logistics, but also someone with a sense of humor who understands the show, that we're not looking for the best of a particular area, we're not looking for top 10, we're not looking to be necessarily informative, you know, we're looking for a very special type of person. Zamir was one of our original fixers, so that should tell you something. But how do we make selection? It's a long process. I mean, we're looking for someone to present us. We reach out to bloggers a lot. You know, if you're looking where to eat in Saigon, chances are somebody has been eating their way across Saigon, painstakingly chronicling every food stall. Other times, there are people who blog just about noodles in the Hong Kong area. So we pay a lot of attention to bloggers, actively recruit them as fixers or sidekicks on the show, do a lot of pre-production. What am I missing here? I mean, this is your department, really.
Yeah,
what are you looking for in a fixer?
Like you said, someone who just, you know, gets the show, gets what we're doing, doesn't have any allegiances with, you know, a tourism bureau.
Yeah, that's
government.
Lethal.
That's a big one.
So what happens when, so let, Tom, this is right up your alley. What happens when we choose a fixer badly and the government gets heavily involved and want to micromanage everything and step in and say things like, you know, don't shoot that street food, shoot nice new Cadillac car, new hotel. What happens then?
I think it's a bit of a backfire for the government, unfortunately.
Example?
Well, there's the Romania episode, which I think is
your episode, wasn't it?
My episode.
Tom is public enemy number one in Romania. He was front page news for like a week. He's been identified publicly as an agent for both the KGB and the Mossad by the Romanian press.
It got pretty messy.
You're never allowed back there, are you?
Yeah, but it was some funny shit. We don't go looking to go piss on a country. I want every show to be a happy, me having a really good time and learning something and for it to be a positive show. But I think one of the paradoxes of the show, the ironies of the show, is that when things go terribly, terribly wrong and I'm miserable and absolutely everything turns out disastrously, sometimes that ends up being some really classic television.
Pretty much always.
Yep, definitely.
And other spots in Austin you had so far?
I love it here. This is not going to be... Listen, it's not hard to find good food and good time in Austin. I don't want to kiss your ass too much, but it's... it's... You know, we're here for a reason, because I've been here many times before and like it. Love it.
Hey, to follow on that a little bit, I'm curious. Actually, I was sitting next to you at Sabo when you were in San Francisco. You guys look like you're having a really great time. And thank you for your Barney Greengrass show way back in the day, because it actually changed my life. But what cities in the U.S. are you still looking to hit... that you haven't. I'm just curious, what are the things within the U.S. that you're looking to hit city-wise?
I'm looking to figure out a way to do a really good Philadelphia show. We've managed to. Haven't done it yet. I'm still looking for a hook, you know, a way in, an angle. You know, there always has to be something. Sometimes it's a nonsensical thing. But so Philadelphia would be an example of a city we've neglected. Where else? Where have I not been that I'd like to go? I don't know. It's hard to do full hour. You know, I like Asheville, North Carolina. That's an awesome town. There's a lot of good stuff going on there. Don't know. It'll come to me later.
Thanks.
Hi, Tony. First of all, thank you for putting Colombia, South America in a spot. I mean, in your show.
That was a happy show for all of us. We loved being in Colombia, and that was one of the shows where we all came out feeling actually good about the world and hopeful for a brighter future. That doesn't happen a lot. So,
but it was a very positive show and everything for Colombia. And second of all, was it for you guys a challenge like to be in Medellin, because you really went into a really like special places there, and
were we challenged?
It's quite hot.
It's quite hot?
Yep. Hot in the sense that it could be dangerous?
Oh, no. No. We've never been more welcome anywhere. We've never felt more at home. I mean, that whole country, that's what was so awesome. I mean, Medellin in particular, when we went to Oriental, you know, this is an area where the cops were afraid to go 5-6 years earlier.
Yep.
It was a murder capital of the world. And people were so thrilled and proud that an American crew was filming and not about drugs or murder. And people could not have been nicer. I mean, it was just a big, huggy, feel-good show from beginning to end. Everywhere we went, everybody was pretty... This doesn't happen a lot in our experience. Pretty positive about, on balance, about their government and about the way things were going in their country. And everybody's real happy to see, a silly American TV crew making TV about their food. It was a really positive experience for us.
Are there other places that surprise you like that, where you read all this stuff that you're worried that your experience is going to be one way, and then you get there and you have a completely different experience?
Well, we're surprised a lot. I mean, Saudi Arabia ended up being a lot more fun, and I ended up feeling a lot more comfortable and close to people than I thought I would. But Colombia was the one where I actually came out thinking, you know, wow, if they can make things better in Medellin, you know, what's our excuse for, you know, Detroit or West Baltimore or D.C.? You know, we can fix that, goddammit, if they can fix, you know, Medellin. I mean, I actually came out of there thinking, you know, it's possible to change the world. That's not my usual state of...
It's a fun... just on behalf of Colombians, I'm Colombian, and I really want to thank you for putting us there in a positive way.
Thanks for having us. We'd love to go back.
Hello. Your mention of the esteemed Twitter journalist Drunk Hulk made me want to ask you your opinion on another kind of pseudo, not real Twitter celebrity, Ruth Bourdain.
It's funny stuff. Parody is good. I mean, it's, you know, I think it's very, I think Ruth Bourdain is really, really funny. And, you know, I sort of, he was unmasked a while back, and everybody, I think, has sort of pretended not to have noticed because we wanted to keep going. So, you know, the world needs, you know, funny people, and Ruth Bourdain's pretty funny.
It's the biggest form of flattery, I think, when you can get somebody to make a Twitter account that's mocking you.
It's just a great idea, and I have to say, I'm really enjoying Angry Bobby Flay. Angry Bobby Flay is awesome. It's really hysterical, and we're liking Paula on Trial is also pretty good. Who else?
Is there a fake Paula Deen on Twitter?
Of the fake Paula Deens, the Paula on Trial is pretty,
yeah,
I think, the best I've seen.
We have time for one more question.
Hi, guys. Thanks for a very cool panel. I have two very quick questions. Have you guys done a show in Indonesia?
We have. We did a show in Java and in Bali.
Cool. I think I might have missed that. I'm from Indonesia, so need to check that out.
Second best lechon in the world.
Cool. My second question would be, because you guys started from an established, you know, food and travel network, and then now you're trying to do a bit more crazy stuff on the social space. What do you guys think about the guys like from Epic Mealtime or like My Drunken Kitchen, who started with something very niche, you know, about food, and now they're starting to be picked up by a lot of mainstream media? I think the Epic Mealtime guys are about to have their own TV show and stuff. So what do you guys think about them?
I think it's all good. I think the more the merrier. And I think what's great about all of this is that, you know, anybody with a kitchen, a sense of humor, and a camera can make something. And
I think that's why we love black metal vegan chef so much.
Right. I'm not exactly vegan friendly, but I love black metal vegan chef. It's just good to know people like that are out there making things. You know, I respect people who make things, anything that makes it possible for more people to make interesting things. How could that be bad? You know, it's like a lot of it's the same. You know, it's the same thing that, you know, you see a lot of chefs were very uncomfortable early on about Yelp, about bloggers, about, you know, you're constantly reviewed from the minute you open the door. It was suddenly a brave new world that a lot of chefs are very uncomfortable with. To me, it's a big bathroom wall that anybody can write on. And at the end of the day, we learn to read that wall in ever-changing ways. And at the end of the day, there will be a consensus. You know, somebody will write, you know, Tony's great. Someone will write Tony's an asshole next to it. But at the end of the day, just as when you read message boards on anything, you arrive at some kind of a consensus as to what's good, what's bad, what's useful, what's interesting.
Can you ever see yourself focusing more on digital distribution than television?
I think we're all looking. We've all looked at a couple of real pioneers. First, I think we were very much influenced by Howard Stern's live tweet of Private Parts a few years back. I think it was a groundbreaking moment, clearly, as it drove the ratings to a spectacular degree. What Louis C.K. did, I think, was another groundbreaking thing. We're very much keeping an eye on that and we're all looking at the day where, I mean, the whole world is changing. The whole dynamic of television is changing. Everybody knows that. You know, the dinosaur is, the body's dead. You know, the brain is, you know, eventually going to get the message. And I think we're preparing for that, sure.
Yeah, and I just got to give credit to Chris Collins and Lydia Tignaglia and Joe Catarini of 0.0. They really let us take risks and, you know, let us post things like Krampus on our ZPZ YouTube channel. And hopefully we can continue to do more things like Krampus. And
I think, we're encouraged to, you know, violate any and all mediums in any way that we can.
That is our business plan, definitely.
Every orifice. I think we're just about out of time. I wanted you guys to make sure you see all the different ways you can connect with Anthony and 0.0 and all the great stuff that they're producing for the show and also online. So make sure... actually, you said that you might be able to pass out this presentation
if you
digitally.
Just hit me up on Twitter, at IntinoRes, and I'll be glad to send this out.
Cool. Thanks a lot for coming, guys.
Thank you for an awesome turnout.